Martin Ford, Rule of the Robots, things we need to be worried about with the rise of AI. You've been hearing a little bit about my concerns. It's much more a reflection about who we are going to be in AI as it expands. But what is the possibility of AI to us in a malevolent way? We'll find out next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Martin Ford, I read an article not too long ago about why the CAPTCHA program, where we as humans, to prove we're not robots, identify like where the traffic lights are in an image, right? And then check the box, I am not a robot, and whatever, by highlighting, you know, which of these images have cars in them or whatever, that the online bots have gotten so sophisticated that they are able to defeat CAPTCHA. And so now they had to make CAPTCHA harder on humans in order for it to be able to weed out these online bots that are cruising along trying to get entry into programs on websites. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be a race in many ways as these technologies get better and better.
That's a simple way that we have of proving we're not a robot. Who knows what that would be like in the future? But what are your biggest concerns with the rise of the robots on how things will impact rule of the robots?
Well, one concern that I really talked about a lot is the potential impact on jobs, right? So I do think that robots and smart algorithms are going to automate a lot of jobs. I mean, if you come to work and you're doing, you know, the same kind of things again and again, if your job is relatively predictable, relatively routine, then there's probably within the next 10 years or so a good chance that at least part of your job could be automated. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a manual type job working in a factory or a warehouse, actually, you know, physically moving things around in the environment, or if it's a white collar job where you basically sit in front of a computer and do some routine work. We were talking earlier about the systems that can, you know, write news articles, for example. That's the right kind of thing I'm talking about. So there is definitely the potential for a lot of jobs to disappear in the coming years and decades, and that's something that we're definitely going to have to find a way to adapt to. So that's one thing. And then there are many other concerns that come along. There's the issue of deepfakes, which is when artificial intelligence is used to create fabrications, fake media. And you can go online, and if you Google deepfake photographs, you'll see these incredibly realistic-seeming photographs of people that look exactly like real photographs, but actually these people don't exist. They're just created by the machine. There's no living person that actually looks exactly like what you see in that photo. It's just made out of, you know, digitally created. So that's just one simple example, but this technique can also be applied to other media. Can it be applied to audio files and to movies, videos? So in the future, what you're going to see is the fabrication of, you know, media that is intended to deceive people. So to give one example, there have already been cases where people have created deepfake audio tracks of a company CEO, of the president of the company, telling the finance people to wire money to some account, right? And what they do is they do a phone call that you know, it pretends to be the CEO calling in, and they play this audio track, and they've actually tricked employees at these companies to wiring millions of dollars to, you know, to accounts, basically, you know, stealing the money. So this has happened already, and this is something that could be applied to anything. So imagine what it could do to an election. Imagine that just a few days before an election, some sound file, maybe something that purports to be a recorded phone call or something, comes up of a politician, a person running for president, saying, you know, horrible things, maybe racist things or criminal things or whatever. And this, you know, goes viral. People hear this, and it sounds exactly like this person speaking, because this is artificial intelligence that is actually trained on the information that's out there. So, for example, if you're a very prominent person, like a politician, you've done lots of television interviews and given speeches, and all of that is online. So this AI system can in effect listen to that and learn from it and learn how to mimic the way this person speaks. And then you can actually fabricate a recording of that person saying anything you want. So you can imagine how damaging that could be. You can imagine evidence in court cases being fabricated. You know, maybe somebody being wrongfully convicted on the basis of,
sure,
of evidence that's been created. And this ultimately will also apply to video. So you can imagine, you know, entirely fake videos being created. And we've seen just in the last year or so what a viral video, the impact it can have on our society, right?
Right.
It can cause social unrest. You can imagine some adversary of the United States maybe creating a totally fake video with the intention of causing social unrest. So that's,
well, even,
that's one.
And that's already, that's already happening, right? I mean, we see that between our political parties. I'm reminded of that very well faked because of how cleverly it was edited and how indistinguishable it was edited of the sound sync with the video image of Nancy Pelosi, whose voice was slowed down to make it sound like she was drunk, but through a computer program, looking at the image, it didn't show any signs of decay in the physical action of speaking. So if you were looking right at it, it was extremely convincing that you were looking at a video of her speaking in real time, but the audio was what we would associate with somebody who had slurred speech of a drunk. And it was so convincing that it made the rounds on legit news sites immediately for about 48 hours before people caught it as a deep audio fake.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's one, you know, fairly simple example, just, you know, getting someone's speech to slur, but there are much more sophisticated examples,
right,
already. Actually, there's a television show I'd recommend if you're interested in noon bases. It's called For All Mankind, and it's on Apple TV, and it's about an alternate history where NASA pursues the space race with the Soviet Union, and we have much more advanced space technology. But what they do in that TV show is they use deep fakes, and you will see these scenes where Ronald Reagan is on television talking about, you know, what's happening in this TV show, which of course never,
right,
actually happened, right? About, he's talking to these astronauts on the moon that were never there. And it sounds totally realistic. And, you know, you can actually create a video of Ronald Reagan in his voice saying whatever you want. So that's
right,
how advanced it is already.
Yeah. And are you familiar with the Well Said Labs?
No, I haven't heard of that.
So wellsaidlabs.com, and it's a website to which you would subscribe where you send in your text and they have AI voices built for every story and reading style that you want, and you can edit it as you please. You can have them do 20 different takes. You could have them change inflection. And you can make changes to the script without ever having to hire a human being. And in a lot of ways, what people are saying is this is not unlike Siri, that people are already using Siri as their favorite morning show host, that they program Siri to give time checks, weather checks, play their favorite songs, and they don't go to a live radio.
Right. So that's actually also another example of how this could impact jobs, right? I mean, you're going to see,
yeah,
the impact on actors, the people that read audiobooks. You know, if you listen to an audiobook, they hire people to do that, right? But someday machines will certainly be able to do that probably just as well as people.
We're not too far away from, just on your point about jobs, from a self-learning program that can create, given enough data input, a design for a new dress. Then through another program with which it is linked, do the actual drawings and the specs for what that dress would look like have to be cut from. Then those are transferred over to the smart machines, which then cut the fabric to fit the designs, which then are sewn together, stitched automatically by another machine. And all of these could be done in a variety of sizes fairly instantaneously or on demand. And then once the designs were fabricated and we had the actual dress based on the original computer-generated design, then that dress would be promoted through a robo-writing program, like a Quillbot, as they call them, and that Quillbot AI would write the promotional material for that dress, which would then appear automatically on an Amazon account, which would then automatically be sold through Amazon, and the fulfillment and the shipping for it would be done by robots on the other end, and no human being was necessary at any point in the process other than the spending of the money.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely moving to that kind of vision, and you see that all over the place. Even in science, you've now got robotic laboratories that can perform experiments and look at the results of those experiments and then refine the experiment, perform another experiment in order to, for example, discover new materials and things like this. So it's already becoming very, very powerful.
Tell me, Martin Ford, again, the new book is called Rule of the Robots. You can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll give you the numbers you need at the bottom of the hour to join the conversation. Martin, what do you think of as being the most, even if it's outlandish, what is the biggest, most nefarious problem that could be lurking in the zeros and ones of these systems in the future?
I would say to me that at least in the fairly near term, one of the most scariest possibilities is fully autonomous weapons, right? So we have now drones that the military uses, right, and can, you know, attack people, kill people, but those drones are controlled by people, right? And there's a person there sitting in front of a screen controlling that drone, that robotic weapon, and looking through a camera to see what's there, and ultimately human beings decide, you know, whether to launch a missile and attack. But we are closely moving to a future where the machines will take over all of that, and they will be fully autonomous. You can imagine a drone that would all by itself identify a target, maybe using facial recognition, and then decide to kill that person, right? And this is a really, you know, terrifying prospect that you know, many people are really worried about, so worried about that there's an initiative in the United Nations to ban these types of weapons in the same way that chemical weapons and biological weapons are banned, because it could be really scary. It wouldn't be just one of these drones. It would potentially be hundreds of them or thousands of them that could swarm and attack targets. And these might initially be developed and used by militaries, but there's a real risk that eventually, if that technology is developed, it could fall into the hands of terrorists, right, or you know, other bad people, criminals, and that would create, you know, complete chaos, right? These are then weapons that could be used against civilians, maybe even in countries like the United States. So that's a very, very scary scenario, and that's not science fiction. You know, I mean, we talked earlier about machines that can think like people or be conscious. That is, you know, very far in the future, but this is not. This is not the machines waking up and attacking us by themselves. This is you know, some other person or a group of person developing these technology and then deploying it to attack some adversary. And this is something that could happen, you know, really within the next few years. So it's really quite a scary scenario.
And I think, again, this comes back to the self-learning wrinkle, too, that if we talk about robots or artificial intelligence as a mandate for our definition of that would have to be that there was some degree of self-learning. I do wonder whether at what point self-learning might become a bell we can't unring with regard to self-governance. That if we trust robots to provide, for example, security, at what point could a self-learning artificial intelligence system decide differently than what we want it to do?
Yeah, that's a real question. And again, that's focused mostly on that more futuristic scenario, that if we really build machines that are at our level of intelligence or maybe beyond us, then it could be very difficult to control that technology, right? We might initially, you know, essentially tell it or ask it to do some particular thing to achieve some objective, but then it might act in ways that we didn't expect, and it could, be harmful to us, right? There are actually people that worry that could be a true existential threat, that sometime in the far future that these kinds of robots or AI systems could actually destroy humanity, right? And this is something that Elon Musk has talked about. You may have heard, he's got these quotes where he says artificial intelligence is more dangerous than North Korea or more dangerous than nuclear weapons. This is what he's referring to, this very futuristic scenario where we might kind of lose control of this technology. Again, that's a real concern, and there are a lot of really smart people at universities and places like that are actually working on this problem. How can we design AI systems that will never get out of control? So it's a real concern, but again, it's something that I think is pretty far in the future.
So I'm always worried about that. The far in the future concept, only because it's relative, and it also because development of new technologies is always going to be incentivized to some degree by profits, without much in the way of guardrails, until we get to a point where things are a little out of control. For example, some of our social media issues. I'm not one for curbing social media myself, but I understand the argument that it's already out of control, in that these systems were able to send out messages to vulnerable people, and they cherry picked on the basis of various algorithms who would be the receptors of influential deep fake videos, fake news stories. And it landed in fertile ground. You know, if you scatter enough bullets, you're going to hit something. And that this is the essence of this argument that's going on Capitol Hill. I will say this, and I think this is in my friend Dennis Carlin sent this to me. I don't know if you saw the story about how Amazon's cloud outage left millions of people who use smart technology locked out of their homes, unable to use their refrigerators, vacuum cleaners, house lighting systems, security systems, that just taking down the cloud had a devastating impact on a lot of people. And how soon would that be before that would cause a run on banks? People were afraid that their money, their digitized money, couldn't be stuffed in a mattress, and they wanted to actually physically hold it in their hand. All right, let's leave that there from now, because we're going to give you all the numbers you need to participate in this conversation, Loving It So Much with Martin Ford. You can link up to him at coasttocoastam.com. Then we're a half hour away from open lines, but let's see how many calls we can get in with your questions and comments about robots. Good robots or bad robots, evil AI. what your biggest concerns are. And you can ask that of a guy who's studying that subject. The new book is Rule of the Robots, and we'll get to all of that coming up next. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. Lining up questions and comments for Martin Ford, our guest, who will take to the top of the hour, then we'll go to open lines on the way on Coast to Coast AM. Looking up at the stars myself these days and imagining the future. I mentioned earlier, just turned in a manuscript to IGI Global, which is an international academic publishing house, on the future of journalism. I didn't write it. Very brainy people wrote it. And one of those chapters was about the rights of robots and kind of the trajectory of informational robots, for that matter, too. Dr. Nikhil Morrow was one of the people who was responsible for one of those chapters. And there are others. I'll tell you more about the book when it becomes available at the end of this month. But it was really interesting to read. I mean, I just edited it. I was the junior editor for the project, and that meant I did a lot of the scut work. That's okay. I didn't mind. But like every other page, I was like, what? No. And then you'd actually look into it, and we had our kind of the undergirding of the research that substantiated a lot of these claims, and it's not that far off. Some of the things which could be wonderfully beneficial to us could be coming a lot faster than we think. And I'll tell you more about the book when it becomes available, maybe even have a conversation or two on the air about it, because I know many people are interested in the future of journalism. Anyway, the book is called Wasteland to Wonderland. And as we head into that top of the hour, too, I want to bring your attention to YouTube, where you could, if you weren't able to catch the first hour of this show live, you can always find it in that first hour slot on our YouTube channel. Tom Danheiser is standing by. And Tom, I went looking for a first hour YouTube appearance by Rainn Wilson, who we had on last spring on Coast to Coast. Couldn't find it on the YouTube channel for Coast to Coast, but you know what popped up? A link to the audiobook.
Yeah.
I was surprised that that was a whole nother platform I didn't even know about, that a lot of our shows end up as podcasts on like Amazon and audiobooks?
Yeah, they sure do. And, you know, check this one out. First of all, we're at almost 500,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. Can you believe that?
That is amazing.
That is fantastic. Fabulous. And, you know, just because you didn't find the show you were looking for now doesn't mean it won't be added later.
Okay.
So, you know, we just don't have everything up there right now.
Well, no surprise. But, I mean, it was like, then I went to find it, and I found it on Amazon. And I went, well, I guess I'm there sometimes. I had no idea. Not a clue. Yeah. And it was fun to hear that first hour again.
Yeah, and it's really great. You know, folks, you can listen to the first hour, the recent and past shows. It's all free. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. And right up there, we have a little YouTube icon. So just click that, and there's free show audio there. So you can go there. And Ian, I did want to tell you, you asked a very important question before the break. What happens if AI doesn't listen to us?
Yeah.
And that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. What if YouTube is the one that chooses which shows it will allow people to hear?
Terrible.
What if there's an algorithm that said, nah, I don't want anything with that guy Ian on it.
you reminded me when you were talking about the banking system of the guy. Did you follow that story a couple of years ago?
Oh.
The guy that lost about $220 million in Bitcoin because he forgot his password.
Yeah, the key to that. And that they're still... They're still sorting through the garbage heap, trying, like, against hope that they're going to find that he had put it in a bag and that they're going to actually find that bag someday. I can't imagine spending the rest of your life. How would you feel less like a wealthy man if you have to sort through mountains of garbage like that?
Man.
I would just, but it would break. Who could sleep knowing there was $220 million out there?
Well, I guess they said
in a garbage bag.
I guess they said last year that he came to peace with it, but I'm not sure I believe that.
Yeah, I think he just came to silence over it because he was tired of answering questions. How could you be so stupid?
Oh my God.
All right. Well, I know you've got a little job here to do to get more people lined up for Martin Ford. I'll let you get to that, and then we'll get to those calls coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, whenever we grab a guest and calls, we look for those first-time caller lines first. And Max is in Kalamazoo on Coast to Coast AM for Martin Ford, robot expert. Max?
Hi, Ian, and thank you. Ian, regarding the rights for robots, shouldn't God have forced us to learn the Holy Scriptures in the womb before we were born? Because aren't we effectively God's robots?
I can't quite follow that parallel. Explain what you mean.
Well, you're saying that if we don't teach robots human morals,
no,
before we create them.
Nope. What I'm saying is, we have to resolve our issues. We have to resolve our horizon line on how we're going to define, for example, citizenship. How are we going to define civil rights? If treating a dog, which is not a human, if mistreating a dog can be inhumane, it's a reflection on us, not on the dog. Right? We're not judging on the dog's humanity. It's our own inhumanity. And in the case, for example, of our American past, rules had to be written that prevented slaves from self-learning, from being able to read and write. It became illegal to teach a slave how to read because reading led to learning, led to self-awareness, led to rebellion. And so that's the parallel I'm drawing. I'm not sure I still follow your point beyond that.
Well, I would say that the morals should have been taught to us in the womb before we were born, just like you're requesting that be done for robots before we create them. And if God had done that in the morals and maybe forced us to learn the Holy Scripture in the womb, then the problems that we have and have created and continue to spawn throughout our world and possibly throughout other worlds.
Yeah, that's not my point. So, I mean, if that's your point, then that's your point. But that's not even close to what I just said. I'm not saying it's embryonic. I don't think we can teach morals in the womb. So I won't even accept that as a premise, but if that's how you look at it, that's fair, but that's not how I would look at it. You have a question for our guest?
Well, that was it.
Okay.
You know, basically, when you look at, aren't we effectively God's robots?
No, we're not effectively God's robots at all. So, no. But I don't see it that way. If you want to look at yourself as a robot for God, that's part of the glory of free will and your right as an American to think any way you want. And I support that, even though I don't think it's close to what the scriptures are saying or what good theology would argue. West of the Rockies, Jeff is in Santa Rosa, California on Coast to Coast. Jeff?
Hello, good morning.
Hey.
Okay. I disagree that robots can ever become self-aware, because to be self-aware means one has a soul and a spirit, an awakened spirit, which gives rise to emotion or an emotional body. AI is line of sight reasoning only and is totally physically oriented in its reasoning. A programmer cannot gift a soul. A programmer cannot gift an awakened spirit or any spirit at all, and a programmer cannot gift emotion. If you take AI and stick it into a living flesh and blood body that has a spark of life, when the body dies, the AI mind will go back to oblivion. But the body will make a ghost that has no soul, no spirit, and no emotion. basically stated a demon. And
that's not the definition of a demon, but here's the problem with that. Here's the problem with that is this was an argument that used to be made about people who came about as a result of artificial insemination. So perhaps we could say a different kind of AI once upon a time. And I'm old enough to remember when that was said openly to mothers who were carrying children that came from artificial insemination. Your child will have no soul because it wasn't conceived naturally according to the Bible. So that was how the soul was, that's how in what theological terms we would call that ensoulment, that's when it transpired. So if the child was created in a petri dish, then it would have no soul. I'm assuming you don't believe that, correct?
I'm not sure of, because we're talking about a digital mind, an artificial intelligence, and this is not exactly a machine.
That was the argument, that science created these children, and that if God wanted you to have children, God would have made you fertile. And because you are being artificially inseminated, because a child is, that's created and then cryonically they were storing the embryos and whatever, that was an unnatural process. And a different AI at the time, artificial insemination, was considered to be ungodly, and therefore your children had no souls. I'll speak for you, and I will say you don't believe that. And here's why. Because you have no idea the people you meet who came about from artificial insemination and those who don't. There's no difference. They're not zombies. They're not demons. They're people. Let's go to Dimitri in Oregon on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. And my apologies, Martin Ford. I keep trying to get you questions, but they keep throwing the theological stuff at me. Well, it's an odd side hustle I have. Dimitri, you're talking with Martin Ford.
Hello. Good evening or good night. I had two comments to make regarding AI. One,
sure.
As long as you let me continue speaking, but I can go further and further. But anyway, one is to I had a concept to understand how the difficulty among programmers that they cannot decipher how the AI thinks. Am I there?
Yeah, you're talking with Martin. Martin,
okay.
Want to address that question?
I haven't finished. I wasn't sure if I'm still on. Sometimes I lose connection.
Okay, but we do want to get to the guest's thought on this more than. But go ahead.
I haven't finished my statement.
Okay, just be mindful of other people. I'm good.
Yes,
go ahead.
Yes. I was going to say that to understand the thinking of AI, to take the approach of three-dimensional, like a PT scan, but high speed, and to have another software to decipher and put it in words understandable for the humans, like a translator that will... decipher the transaction when the AI thinks upon a certain situation, and that way maybe perhaps we can understand how it thinks. When you have a PET scanner like a positron that can follow every movement of electrons in a three-dimensional setting.
Let's get Martin in here on that. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a good point. It is true that some of the AI systems that we have, it's hard to understand exactly what's happening inside those systems. They're sometimes called black boxes that we don't know exactly how they're arriving at their conclusions. The AI systems we have are what's called neural networks. They're kind of based on the way the brain is structured. But there are definitely people working on that so that we can understand that more. It definitely will be easier with these systems because they are software that is simulating kind of the way a brain works at a very rudimentary level. So we can get more visibility into that than we could into a human brain. So, you know, there are a lot of people working on the problem of more transparency into the way AI systems think.
Love that. West of the Rockies, John is in Alberta, Canada, on Coast to Coast for Martin Ford. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I was just curious. Sometimes when you talk to Siri, which is kind of a form of AI, I think, she sometimes says, interesting question. Is
right.
it possible that she's contemplating her own programming and maybe trying to ask what's been given to her?
Yeah, that's probably just a programmed in, like, a response when she doesn't really know how to respond. I mean, you know, the AI that we have, like Siri, is very limited, right? Someday you'll be able to talk to your phone and it will really be like a conversation with another person. We're definitely not there yet. What we have now are systems like Siri or Amazon Alexa, and they're very limited. So when it gets to a point where it just doesn't know what to do, or it needs more time to figure it out, or it's hoping that you'll say more, maybe to give it a clue to figure it out, then it will come back with a response like that.
Interesting point, though. Dave is in Washington State on a wild card line for Martin Ford. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, hey, well, the points I wanted to make were, one, I don't think that it's reasonable to compare potential robots, mechanical, you know, machines that we create in the future to any, like, slavery in the past, because anyone that was a slave in the past, and it's not just the United, I hear people say, you know, the terrible past of the United States. We really should always just say the terrible past of the world, because you pretty much can't find a civilization that never had slaves on this planet.
We were slower to abolish ours, unfortunately. So, yes, I agree with you.
I would challenge that, but let's
you can't, but go ahead. I mean, that's an easy one to figure out, because we have that as a matter of historical record. But you had a question for Martin Ford. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the robot issue is that robots are not flesh, breathing, blood entities like slaves.
You're right.
They are mechanical machines, and they are no more going to be reality than the programmer is successful at programming them, because all a machine is going to do is, within milliseconds, it will transact through millions of possible reactions that it has learned, kind of like the deep think you guys were talking about, that you watch, it can watch videos of people talking online, and after watching enough of them, it can recreate that. Well, you give that across every possible solution that you program this computer to do, and it's going to come up with the most real life situational response, and it's going to make you think that it's a real person with thoughts, even though it's not. It's just been programmed to come up with the best response that makes it look like that.
I accept that, and I'm glad, Dave, that you are enlightened enough to know that it was never right to ever treat any human being as not a full human, or not counting, that if you killed them, it didn't even count as murder, because you were essentially killing a brute beast, and that they were no more than that. I'm glad you recognize that now. The defenders of slavery for centuries believed that that was the case, and that's why they slept quite well, and they preached it in their theology from their pulpits, and we all know that that's wrong. I wonder in the future, and this is the question, is in the future, how will we handle our own humanity when it comes to how we treat something which we are asking to become more and more human-like? And that is the crossroads question that I'm throwing out. I understand why it's kind of a question for a lot of folks, but I don't think it's that far out of bounds. So, Martin, you were terrific, and I want to make sure that we mention the books, both of them, because your book about Rule of the Robots comes from Rise of the Robots, and maybe even goes back to your book originally, The Lights in the Tunnel, but I don't know much about that book. But I do know you were a wonderful guest, and thank you for handling everything as beautifully as you did. And I look forward to having or hearing you back on Coast to Coast again coming up soon.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
And a happy holiday to you, whatever it is that you celebrate, even if it's just time off. So some people were already calling in, trying to lock in a line for open lines, and we'll get to them coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.